Oh God!
Take that. This is official.
We're gonna put this over here. We've got a really nice house. We use boxes as footrests.
They're actually just shoes we're returning.
Yeah, they're shoes we're returning because we would never wear anything that isn't VJ. But we would buy them and then return them.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
How's it going?
Good, man. Good. We'll just jump right in because we don't have a plan.
Okay.
Oh, puppy. Hold on. Do you want to see the puppy first? My wife has to come see the dog.
Ellie, come look at the puppy.
Cute.
She's tired.
She is tired.
She ran 16 miles next to us while we were biking yesterday.
Yeah.
She's super
I saw dope. That. She was hauling.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a monster.
No, we have I have my dog. He sits here in here every time we do this. He sits on the floor here. He's the office dog. He if I don't let him in, he scratches at the door.
Why aren't you showing us him right now?
Because he's I don't know if I can do okay, Helen. I'm not good. There's a lot of wires attached. Cody.
Look at God. Crazy.
Oh, he looks like a box.
Hold on, Cody. Come here, Cody.
Okay, sorry. We can go back to
there he is.
This is quickly becoming a Mappy Davis podcast.
Yeah. Okay, go on, go lie down. All right. Should we do like an introduction? Okay, welcome to the OFX podcast. I'm Dave Claxton. And along with me is the taskmaster of the mountain, Bethany McChesney. And a guy who will drive 8 hours in the middle of the night to not buy me a beer.
Yep. Oh shit, I forgot.
Seriously?
I thought about that when we left. I'm like, ooh, he didn't buy him a beer before we left. We should have at least bought one and like dropped it off.
Yeah. Run it out the window as we went by.
That's all right. We'll put it on the 2022 account.
Yeah, just put it on my tab for when I'm wrong again.
So you before we get to why you were so wrong and I was so right, let's start out with the whole thing. What gave you the concept to even come up here for this? Because I mean, you were the only American that made the trip.
Yeah, I'm a genius.
Both were the only Americans that made the trip.
Yeah, basically it's called cherry picking. Basically
you tried to cherry pick a race with Atkins at it. That was smart.
Yeah, exactly. I messed that one up. So I got surgery in April. So that kind of took me out of the U.S. National Series because I was on crutches from February to almost June, I think. So, or no, May, but where I was like crippled till June. So yeah, it was like 4 months of cripplage. So yeah.
I wouldn't have stopped Hunter. I went to
the Canadian National Series, which was cool.
You know what? If the whole thing had gone, like all of it, if they had done the full thing, it would have been really good. I mean, it was still good. It was still good, but I mean, it would have been more substantial.
Well, yeah. So I had actually planned on doing it in 2020 as well, because that series was like legit and there was more races and it looked sick. And there was a sprint super beast. There might have been two beasts or two supers. So,
yeah, there were only three or four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to do three of the four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looked sweet though. No. Yeah. Maybe next year.
But didn't they already release next year's only two races also?
For Canada?
No, they haven't released it yet.
Oh, all right. Good.
We'll see. I mean, I would bet that they're going to release a schedule that is the same as what they tried to release in 2021 at the beginning, or at least very similar to it.
Yeah.
Which means you'll probably get a race out west that will be. You know, not it'll be hilly, unlike the flat one you just did.
Yeah.
So
that was not flat. Yeah.
What do you think of it, Sarah? Let's go right in. What do you think of the course, Sarah?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was super challenging. I wish there was more single track. My background is mountain running and trail running, and obviously this year I focus on 100-mile races, so. This felt very short, actually. You know, 3 hour effort is actually quite short for me, but so obviously, you know, I liked the trail part, but that was like, even that was very like wet and slippery. And so even the uphill was sort of like challenging on the trail. And in fact, it made the ski slopes easier, I felt like, just to kind of hike up those. But yeah, it was challenging. And I actually had just gotten my COVID booster this week, so last week, so I wasn't feeling my best, but.
Sarah was sick, and then she got her flu shot, and then she got her COVID vaccine, and then she worked like 60 hours last week.
Yeah.
And then we drove to the race.
And then we drove to Canada, and then I raced, and yeah, quickly was like, oh, this is not my day. I'm just gonna have a fun time and walk up these hills. But. It was still good. I mean, I think some people know this was only my third obstacle course race ever this past weekend. So this was great experience and just to be out there and like try the obstacles, and the more I can do them, the better. So yeah, it was fun. I had a good time.
Which ones did you fail?
So I fell off a beater and then...
Well, you missed your spear.
I missed my spear early on. And that's where I lost Ariel and Lindsay at that point. And saw him on the sandbag, and then they were up the hill, and I kind of didn't really see them again. And that's when I was like, okay, forget it, goodbye. And then fell off of multi-rig, fell off of beater. Was that it? I think that was it. Yeah, and everything else I got, which was good. I'm always psyched when I can get like Olympus and Twister and, ones I always...
She's never failed Olympus or Twister.
Not yet. So.
That's not too bad. Actually, we got a video almost together. I got the men's one together. We're going to have the women's one together too. And that put them out at the same time, just of all the highlights and stuff like that we got. So.
Yeah, so the more I get to get out there and practice obstacles, the better for me. So it was fun.
So have you done a lot of grip training then leading into... starting, or this is just raw strength for you?
This is just, I guess, like, I don't even, yeah, people ask me that actually at the race, like, where's your upper body strength come from? And I guess I mean running, certainly, like mountain running here like in the Adirondacks, it's like you're basically lifting yourself up ledges a lot. Like our trails are very technical and very rocky, and like yeah, I think some of that is kind of where my upper body strength comes from, but
Sarah can do four very shaky pull-ups.
I'm really, not good at pull-ups.
As of 4 weeks ago, but now she can do like five very shaky pull-ups, yeah. So.
Well, see, that's like a 20% improvement. That's massive. Yeah. If you continue on that pace, you'll be up to 20 in no time.
Yeah, every week.
But yeah, I think, which is exciting for me to have something to work on and like new skill sets to learn and things to do. So I've been, trail running for a long time. And so of course, like it gets a bit old, the training schedule for that. So it's nice to have something new to work on.
So you guys aren't like out climbing? You're not dragging her out climbing and doing it that way?
She went bouldering once.
Yeah, twice, I think.
Maybe twice. Twice.
And barely, hardly did any actual climbing, but.
The reality is for Spartan Race though, like there's only a couple of obstacles you need it for, really. Like, and most multi-rigs aren't as hard as that one was.
Yeah, wait, let's dive in.
Shall we go in?
Let's dive right in. So So I was freaking stoked because you were like, okay, the multi-rig's gonna be hard. And I was like, sick, a hard multi-rig. And then I apparently missed something at the start, but I got up to the multi-rig, fell off of it, and I was like, actually pretty stoked. I was like, I failed something. This is amazing. This is the first time in 60 races I've ever failed something that's not the spear. And I went and did the loop, and then I got done with the race and started talking to other people, and they were like, oh yeah, I did it. I just grabbed the carabiner. And I was like, what? That's cheating. And they're like, no, you're allowed to like grab on top of the rope where like the nuts and bolts are. And I was like, what? That sounds an awful lot like cheating. And they're like, no, Cobalt like told us that we could and encouraged us to do it. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? That's cheating. Why do they want you to cheat?
So at the women's start, Lindsay did ask like can we grab above the top of the rope? And he said, yeah, you can grab anything that's below the support beam, basically, on the ring. And so that's why she knew to do that. But
yeah, I was just bummed because I was like, sick, I finally have like a reason to like train obstacles. And then afterwards, I was like, this fucking bullshit. Let's just, sorry, I keep swearing on your podcast.
Okay, we do it all the fucking time.
It's just so annoying. I was so stoked that there was a hard obstacle and then it's just gone immediately. They're like, aha, just kidding. We actually totally messed that up.
Here's the full backstory on that ring. So for everyone, the full backstory, I was, like I said, I was on the build crew all week. So I got there and I think it was Monday night, they had finished the rig and I went up and I got on there and I did my little demo for myself and went across it, right? Just bam, 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 got to that. Never even took a test grab of it. Just grabbed it and went woof, right off. And I was like, what the hell? And all of a sudden, then I figured it out, like they left that rubber coating on and everything. So I'm like, I went back down and I told Johnny Waite, I said, in the States, they cut the middle part of that rubber coating off and it's exposed rope. Mm-hmm. If you leave it like that, nobody's going to finish it.
Yeah.
And I was serious. Like, and I mean, I told you when we were talked, I said, no one's going to finish. No, definitely none of them. I'm not trying to be sexist. None of the women in the women's field will get through it. And that's where we had our bet, where I told you at least one of the top five, top 10 men will come off it. And it ended up even this way, grabbing above, it was still more than one of the top 10 men.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was basing that. So, I mean, told you, I was basing it solely on the idea that Spartan wouldn't put in an obstacle that people would fail. I was like, they're just not, like, that's not their MO anymore, is to make hard things. Their MO is to, like, have a pass rate that's, like, 80%. Yes. So, like, why would you put in something that nobody can do? And the answer is, they didn't mean to. They fucked up. And they, like, made this giant...
So it's better though. So I told Johnny, and Johnny's like, I showed him the pictures. He's like, okay, yeah, we should make it because we want consistency with the races in the US. We'll fix it. And again, I tell the build manager, Bear, I tell him the next day, same thing. Show him. He's like, yep, we'll fix it. We see Coble Friday night when we go out to kind of map out where we're going to video. He's actually at the rig when we're there. And again, first off, we show him that at that time, everything was too high. Because when Bethany did a test thing across the rig, if she had fallen, she would have fallen 4 feet right onto the ground. There was nothing underneath.
At least 4 feet. It was a full body length for me. So probably a good 5 feet. And I actually couldn't get on the rig at all. It was so high. Normally I have to jump a little bit, but I couldn't even get on it. So we had to like put extra things underneath the high box. It was that high. Mm.
It was to Bethany's high. It's a standard unit of measurement.
Yeah. The ring
was tall.
Yeah. So we went through that and he accepted to fix that. And I told him about the things and he goes, well, they can just grab above it. And it was kind of like, well, why have it?
Yeah.
Right. If you want them to grab something above it, just put a ring there, take it off. Like it doesn't make any sense. So then I find out later on the next day that it was brought to him as well that by the race director that they should change it to match the States. And his answer was the same. They can grab above it.
Which is crazy because like people, like a lot of people who actually successfully completed the rig by cheating. I'm just going to keep saying that.
I agree.
Their hand is like torn up. Like whichever one they grabbed with is all messed up. Like that's not a solution. I mean, obviously that's not their long-term solution. It's going to be a one-time thing, but still I said the same thing. I was like, well, what if I grab the rings above the ring? They're like, well, that's not allowed. And I'm like, all right. So you're saying like, on one hold and worship. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was like, so oh, on yeah. one hold I can and one hold I can't. And they were like, well, no, like you can, anything below the bars is okay. And I was like, okay, so above the ring. And they're like, no. And I was like, okay, well, Atkins like climbed up the rope to get to the last carabiner thing. And they were like, yeah, that's okay. And I was like, how is this making any sense? I I was like, you should have just moved the bell in or something and not have the slippery rope things, but whatever.
As long as you've made significant engagement, it's okay.
Well, that's what doesn't make any sense. It was like, okay, so the reason why that significant engagement with the obstacle is because Kent purposefully skirted the rolling mud. And it's like, okay, so you put something on there and you're purposefully not engaging with it. Yeah. Like on purpose.
Instructed to do so.
Yeah, yeah. And encouraged to do so. Yeah. Okay, we can move on. Sorry.
How was the penalty loop? Oh, it was very scenic.
Good one.
It was a good one. Yeah. It was actually beautiful. Like you had to drop down, I don't know, maybe like 20 feet. It wasn't very like far.
It was kind of far. It was like 40 vertical feet into a ravine.
I guess. But there was like a waterfall and you had to like cross over this like open like stream and then like climb back up. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I told Koval that I failed the multi-reg and he's like, how about that penalty loop though? And I was like, yeah, that was a solid one. And he was like, yeah, it took me 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
It didn't take us that long, but
that penalty loop I heard was fairly appropriate for failing that obstacle.
I think so.
Yeah.
Did you happen to have any issues with Stairway to Sparta?
Oh, Sarah did.
Oh, I didn't do it. I touched the rig and then I did the penalty loop.
And how was the penalty loop for that one?
Very short. I run up, I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally not even gonna try the obstacle. Because at that point I was also pretty tired and I was like, pretty much done with, like, yeah, I'm just gonna touch it and just keep on jogging.
I did hear some people say they had stuff where like, they would get there at the same time as someone would touch it and run and they'd climb over and they'd end up being done at the same time.
Oh yeah, I definitely, that happened, like two guys were like in the ultra though, were just ahead of me, or just behind me, I think, and I didn't see them again. Like it took them a long time to get over that.
And that is the flaw with the whole penalty loop system. One, it takes extra time to build, it takes extra space, and it's just so inconsistent and not appropriate. Like it can be great sometimes and then it can be shit other times. Like,
so the whole reason the penalty loop thing came about is because all of us basically said that doing 30 burpees at the spear ruins your race. Like without a doubt, it's not just 2 minutes of burpees. It's like the extra 2 minutes you lose from just running economy, just going out the door. And so the first debut, I was the first penalty looper. the first penalty loop they ever did, in like modern Spartan, I guess, was in 2020 for Jacksonville. And so I missed my spear and then went into the penalty loop. It was probably added on like a minute. And I was like, this is appropriate for the spear. This is perfect. It makes total sense. And then recently Koval has said that it's too hard to keep track of who misses their spear and who hits it. And so it makes more sense to do burpees, which makes no sense to me because like, if you miss your spear and just don't do the burpees, isn't that the same as missing your spear and just not doing the penalty loop?
Like, no need to use a good statement with facts.
Yeah, the whole reason for the penalty loop in the beginning was to make the spear like less of a factor. And now we've got the spear being the only one that we do burpees on. And the obstacles that people should be encouraged to complete are now moot because they can just do penalty loops.
So the first penalty loop that I had was actually 2019 in Brimacombe, so Toronto, at the spear throw there.
I did that one too.
There we go.
Yeah. And it was about the length of time, actually, of doing 30 burpees. But I also think one of the things is that then you actually save a ton of time on counting the burpee penalties after. So when you're looking at volunteer issues also with having volunteers at obstacles, people, you don't need volunteers with the camera and the headband checking all that and then time after. So I think that's another big factor with why they keep adding these penalty loops at all these high failable obstacles.
No, I mean, it makes total sense. Then whoever finishes first actually wins the race. What bothers me about the like spear penalty still being a thing is that if somebody like wins the race and then they're like, oh wait, go look at the tape. They miscounted a burpee. They won by 8 minutes, but they missed a burpee. And it's like, okay, now they've just lost the race.
That's why I always do 31.
Yeah.
On Sunday, after you guys left for the age group awards, they were really delayed because I guess a lot of people on the podium had burpee issues and they were running through it, still trying to hand out penalties and stuff. And I've been trumpeting this horn for a while. Why are you doing the not just go multiple attempt for everything, take as many tries as you want, and then still keep a 30 burpee option buyout for the ones that you just simply can't do. That way everybody's happy. You get to keep your stupid burpees. The race moves with flow. It's simple. No cutting extra penalty loops. What's that?
And like, we can actually make obstacles harder. Like then you can have hard rigs that take like, I don't know, 30 seconds to complete. And I don't know, Woodsy can roll up, be like, this is stupid. I'm terrible at rigs. Run over, rip off 30 burpees.
Yeah.
I mean, Woodsy's a bad example because he can actually do rigs now, but and he's retired, but whatever.
He still can't flip a tire though. So use the tire. So, but yeah, you could do that. Like, and even the spear, you miss your spear, right? Pull it back, throw it again. Yeah.
It takes a while to pull it back. Like it's a solid 20 second penalty to miss it.
Yeah. I just don't understand why they don't do it. Well, I do understand why they don't do it because they're Spartan and they're just set in their ways and they're going to do what they're going to do, but it just makes sense.
It's just all based on open waivers. They're just like, we can't back up the open waves. And it's like, we don't need the same rules in the elite or the age group category that we need in open. We have limited number heat, like of people in the heats. It's not going to back up.
No, and all you need is, again, 48 feet of 8 foot wall. Was there a backup at the 8 foot wall? I was just curious. Were you okay? Just when they built the 8 foot wall, there was like 48 feet wide of 8 foot wall.
I was thinking about that too. I was like, this is a 13-mile race. I don't think we need a football field of wall to go over.
I said the same thing to them when we were building. I'm like, holy fuck, that's a lot of 8 foot wall.
Yeah.
Like, how many people are you expecting here at once?
Stampede.
Sure. Yeah.
So you guys, and if we went back, you went out to Red Deer and you came second there. What did you think even of, because we haven't talked to you about any of that stuff. What did you think about going out there? How was the course for out there for you?
Oh, you're talking to me. I thought that course was great. You know, everyone warned me that course was going to suck for me and they were right. But just because it's a fast course and I'm not particularly fast most of the time. Although... Now that I'm thinking about it, I've actually been pretty quick in Jacksonville and short races in general. And even though that was a 6 mile race, it went by in 40 minutes or something.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, the course was set up awesome. We actually ran on trails, which was amazing. I didn't feel like I was just eroding the landscape for no apparent reason when there's like a perfectly good trail or dirt road right next to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. I have zero complaints, which is rare.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of figuring you would, but I have heard some people complain the course at Blue that there were some trails that they could have used that they didn't, and there was a lot of up and down the ski slopes. And just in their defense, Blue Mountain was only allowing them certain access to areas because of, one, they're just getting ready for ski season. They haven't had Spartan there before, so they didn't know how it would go. And also where you had... Like, I know they would have loved to have started and finished the race right in the village there where Olympus and Twister were, but that was not permitted as well. So, I mean, there's certain things with the course that people need to understand. We're out of Spartan's control, and as much as we'll rag on them, yeah, you can't give them any beans for that. It was just shit happens.
I thought Blue was a pretty sweet course. Like I said, I think it's a better venue than Stratton, and that's not knocking, OCRWC, that's just knocking the fact that there's a bunch of rocks mixed in with the ski trails at Stratton and you randomly just are like, oh shit, I'm gonna die if I keep running on these rocks for a couple meters.
The ski slopes were, this pudding was great if it wasn't wet. Like, it was obviously very slippery, you know, and which made it difficult going up and down, but it was like even, you know. I felt like if it were dry, it would have been much faster for me, I think, even running downhill. Just because you were kind of, you know, tentative about sliding out, but
it didn't even get that bad on Sunday. Like, it still wasn't too bad. I was worried that when, by the time I would go, because I went at like 12:45 on Sunday. And I thought by then it would be a mess. And it still wasn't too bad. I mean, it held up well. Actually, I need to thank you, Aaron, because you gave me a very wise tip when we were in Red Deer. I did not say Aru, Aru, Aru at the start. I said Aaron, Aaron, Aaron. And it worked. It was great. What's that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
the trick.
Well, you're supposed to say your name, I think. So yeah, but, it would have been Dave, Dave, Dave or something.
I don't know. It just didn't work. The guy beside me actually noticed though and looked at me like I was screwing it up. He's like, that's not right, you know. So when you guys came up, you decided you come up and had this to do this race. Was it purely for the cash? You just want the cash. Is that all? Is that, that's all you're after? You didn't want the cultural experience, the Putin, the Canadian beer, none of it?
Oh, no, I think we wanted to come up and like see Ryan and Lindsay and.
Yeah,
like,
not you guys.
Visit. I've never been to that part of Canada. Like I grew up here where we are in Saranac Lake, New York. And so it's like an hour from Canada. So I spent a lot of time in like Montreal as a kid. We would go there on family vacations, but yeah, it was like kind of fun to go to a new place. And for me, obviously it was just for experience, you know, more time racing, the better, but.
And you did have your poutine. I saw the video. So.
Yeah. And I did get some poutine.
Did you actually like it?
And yeah, it was good. It was good.
So my wife's American. She hates it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Oh, I love poutine.
No. We were, should we talk about the strip malls?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
on our drive, we were like pretty amazed at how many strip malls there are along the 401 or whatever it is there.
Yeah, so like, 407, I think, the express.
Yeah.
It just is like, as soon as we cross the border from Ogdensburg into whatever it is, basically you hit the 407 and then it's just strip malls and like normal malls and just all the malls. We like pulled over to like for Sarah to go pee or something. And it was just like the only place you could go is inside a mall. It was awesome.
There's a lot of, well, you came up for like through Vermont or area?
No, New York.
Well, through New York, and then like right along the lakes basically.
Yeah, we stayed like 10 miles north of the lake the whole way until Toronto and then we just blasted north.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. There's a lot of freaking malls.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've never thought of it before.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're just used to like around here, there was a mall, but it's like they all like went out of business. Like there's just not enough. I don't know. There's not enough people here for that. But
it's funny, like this close to like south. If you go south of your border, it's northern US and your southern border, it's southern Canada, and nobody lives in Northern America, except in Seattle, really.
Well, I mean, Detroit, all along the lakes.
I guess.
Yeah.
But like everything else is like uninhabited pretty much. So we live here, there's 5,000 people here.
Yeah,
and then there's basically nobody near the border. And then as soon as you cross the border, it's like all the Canadians live right here. So like we're closer to a lot of Canadian cities than we are, like we're a lot closer to Montreal than we are to New York City.
Yeah.
I think it's 50% of the country lives in this little area in like a 4-hour drive area. And then the rest is just vacant land.
Yeah. Somebody told us that like 80% or something of the Canadian population lives within like, I don't know, double digits of the border, like 100 miles.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. Cause you're pretty much taking all the Toronto area, the GTA, Montreal and Vancouver is all involved in that. And that's where everybody is.
Yeah.
But if you've ever been up there, it's uninhabitable.
Oh yeah, really. There's nothing up there. Atkins always gets mad because people in the US say that Texas is huge. They're like, oh, have you ever driven across Texas? And he's like, oh, have you ever driven across Quebec or Ontario or whatever?
That's always my stat when I tell the people in the States, it takes longer to drive across Ontario than it does to take to drive from Toronto to Florida.
Yeah.
And I've done that drive. So
Florida.
Sometimes you got to go to Florida. It happens.
Yeah.
So 2022, is it the plan to come back for this?
Oh, to the Canadian series?
Yeah.
So if it works out.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and this is not knocking Canada, the prize money to competition ratio, I hope no Americans are listening to this, is like makes more sense in Canada. Like the US series should be like 10 grand for first for a race instead of the same exact amount it is in Canada. So, but I think it makes sense in Canada, like 3 grand to like win a race. Like there's maybe 5 people competing for first.
Right.
Yeah, we're working on that. We're trying to figure out how to get more people to jump up.
No, I mean, like you guys have like legit people. It's just hard to like, you have to fly international to race any competition. It's tough. I get it. I mean, I talked to Mick about it and Mick's like, yeah, it'd be great if I could actually race people every now and again.
Yeah, but Mick is in that part of Canada where he has to fly to get to any race.
Yeah. Like, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that Red Deer was actually his close race and he had to fly there. And you know what?
But they need to keep the prize money in Canada as well, the same, because up until 2020, we didn't have this, like it was remarkably different. So people weren't enticed to even move up to elite or Canadians to even race in Canada. So we have to have the same prize money. So now it's finally, we're starting to get more people actually doing the Canadian races. So I think we're just in that transition right now where now we have prize money. So now hopefully our races will start to get a little bit bigger.
Yeah. I mean, in 2020, it was supposed to be, I mean, it was supposed to be me, Atkins, Woodsy, who just were the three people who had talked to each other about coming up and doing the Canadian series.
And you hear whispers about Hosek.
Well, yeah, and then Hosek, I'm sure, would have come. I'm sure Kempson, if he had thought about it, would come. Like, mm-hmm. like a lot of U.S. racers would happily go to Canada because it
Forrest is close to the border, too. He said he was going to.
Yeah. Ouge is very close.
But as far as prize money, can't they just make it whatever they want if they're not going to pay you anyway?
Well, yeah, exactly. Actually, so I made that post, this morning? Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. And then I got a WhatsApp message from Watson who was like, why didn't you just tell me, blah, 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 blah. I just got on the CFO and blah, 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 and yelled at them, and they're going to make it happen, but you should just tell me. And it's like, you can see all these unread messages in his WhatsApp that he didn't look at before that until just then.
Here's the thing. It takes 30 seconds to pay somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. That should be like, if you're offering prize money to engage people to go, that should be top of the list to be done. It should be done. Or, and I was discussing this earlier, put it in the writing when you sign up. If you're signing up for Elite, if you get prize money, you will be paid within 60 days. And then you know going in, hey, I'm going to get paid in the next 60 days or whatever it is.
59 days from now.
Yeah, but you know what? And you will. But at least you'll know and it's done fairly, right?
Yeah, totally.
But I don't know. Again, it's Spartan. They do their own thing. They did a lot great. And actually, Blue was so well received. I have heard very little complaints other than some people who said that's a lot of elevation, and it was. But you know, other than that, it was really well received and really went over well. I don't know. Did you guys have any complaints? Like, I mean, you like to bitch about everything, Aaron. What the fuck was wrong with it?
No, I mean, honestly, I think like having too much elevation is kind of like the Spartan thing that like draws people in. Like Killington used to be notorious and people would show up and just get crushed because it was so hard. So like, I don't think it's necessarily a bad game plan to have the hardest course ever made. You know, Morzine is the most popular race in Europe that I ever hear about. And that's the toughest one there.
I do know this was the first sprint I ever did that had 1600 feet of elevation.
Yeah, true. I mean, are you saying because it is like the national Canadian championship shouldn't have been so hilly? Is that what people are saying? Or
yeah, people just want to bitch about everything. They got to find something wrong with, you know, so it's normally, it's like anybody, they want it. If the course is not tailor-made for them, then it's a problem, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like Red Deer is too flat and now Blue is too hilly. So like, you can't please everybody. People will complain no matter what it is. So make a good course and...
Yeah, the only venue I've found that feels like a very fair course all around is West Virginia, and that's because it's like 3,000 feet of gain. There's a lot of runnable parts. There's some off trail. There's a lot of like dirt roads, some single track, like the only like fair course, but you can't find that everywhere and you don't want to, like, then you don't have people trying to like specialize in running flat races, specialize in just doing mountain races, mm-hmm. you know?
So should you have that though?
Should
you have specialization, right? Should you have, like, I mean, guys like BJ, who, I mean, and I think BJ did great this year, but should you have specialization, or should the national series specifically be? And I think actually the national series should be one of each. Should be, you know, and that should be the mandatory thing. You have to do one of each. That's the national series. But I also would like to see a championship for each distance, as opposed to just randomly, oh, this year it's a beast, or this year it's a super for the championship.
I was surprised by that, actually, as I'm so new to this. Like, I was surprised that there wasn't that already. Like, this is the sprint championship, right? Like, because that's a special, to me, like, a sprint is almost harder because it is so fast, and that's not what I've been training for, you know? So, yeah, I was surprised that that's not already a thing.
I mean, unrelated to the other question you asked, I think a sprint should be 2 miles, and I think it should have, like, 40 obstacles. Like, I think a sprint race should be obstacle heavy, and a beast race should be running heavy.
Yeah.
Like, why do the beast races have the hardest obstacles? You're already running a lot. That's pretty taxing. Right. Like, the sprint race, you're supposed to be able to sprint between obstacles and like do hard obstacles. Like, you should have a lot of energy.
Well, yeah. And even like racing on Sunday, they brought it back down to sprint level. So the rig was just rings going across, and you know, just as I call it, they nerfed it. And I'm like, just leave it, especially for the elite. If you want to change it for the open wave. But for the elite and the age group, leave it and let it be what it is. And yeah,
have lanes like they do. I don't know, is it Savage where they have lanes for elites and then lanes for the open? Mm-hmm. Simple.
But back to your other question of specialization, I actually think that there's a lot of things wrong with Spartan, but I think something they could do right is doing like a trifecta championship. So it's not necessarily like sprint super beast. It's more like you have a race that's like super speed oriented. You have a race that's like super strength oriented, you know, like a lot of double carries, and it's like pretty short. And then you should have an obstacle race that's just a shitload of hard obstacles, you know, like that way, like you can appease Hunter, whose name I'm not allowed to say. So maybe edit that out or else he might sue me. like he can come like show up, he can suffer through the running race, do the strength race, smash everyone, and like attempt to do all the obstacles. And then you have Mark Batcher show up, run the speed race, and then just get crushed the next day, you know. And then like VJ has some incentive to put on some muscle, I have some incentive to crush people at obstacles, and then like
yeah.
And then Atkins can still win everything.
I like that idea, actually. That's unique.
Like, it'd be like a good test. Like, it'd be like a real test of like who's good at everything, instead of just like who's good at like running really hard at altitude, or who's good at running at in the desert. Like, Spartan's so running oriented at this point that there's like obstacles don't make a difference in the race unless you mess one up. You can't make up time. It's not possible.
And that comes down to, again, something that would be great by the multiple attempt deal.
Yeah.
Is you guys are going to be more willing to take chances, right?
Yeah.
You're going to jump, you're going to lache, you're going to fly for it, because if you miss it, you lose 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, taking lache for the second half of Twister is worth it. If you're, you know, if you're not risking 2 minutes of burpees for it to gain 5 seconds, like, so that would encourage risk-taking.
One of the most seen videos on Spartan's Instagram, and the most seen video probably on my Instagram, is me doing twister, whatever, in Tahoe, and I like lashed, and they're like, oh my God, we've never seen someone lashed in this race. It's like, well, yeah, and it's probably a bad idea. I didn't really think about it in the moment, but like, had it been not a penalty of 30 burpees, like, you'd see VJ do that. Like, I'm not the best obstacle course racer. I'm just the most confident on obstacles, which, I don't know. Like, everyone would be more confident if they didn't have the penalty of 30 burpees. Like, Leon is drastically better than me at doing hard rigs, and he's faster, but he's scared of doing 30 burpees.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He should be. He's
Well, I mean, we saw Leon and BJ go through some Spartan race out there, and they were doing a funsy race, and they're through the rig in 5 seconds, taking chances everywhere. And then when it came down to the real race, it was play it safe, go simple, go easy. And it's like,
yeah, it doesn't make the sport exciting. Like, it's not fun to watch. Like, I don't want to see somebody chicken wing through a rig and take 30 seconds. Like, I'd rather see them like fly through it and then like mess up, get back on, fly back through it. Like, I fell off at OCRWC in London, and I had literally never failed a single obstacle ever in a single race to that point. And I just jumped on in the 3K and like swung and just missed something. And I was like, oh, and then I just ran back, did the exact same thing, but grabbed it and then still beat everyone across the rig. And it was like, Jack Carpenter has a video of it, and it's awesome. I was like, this is sick footage. Like, this is the most exciting race out there, because we get to like jump for shit, fuck it up, and then go back and still like beat the other guy who sucks at obstacles, who's playing it safe.
Should the chicken wing be legal on Gibbons?
I think they should just make it so that you can't stick your arm through, but whatever. I mean, I think it's fine because it takes people such a long time. The problem this year was that they put everything so close that Logan was able to just put it in one ring, swing, and then just lashay to the bell. So he didn't even have to do Gibbons.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people do that.
Like, and somebody did that in London, and they ended up in the hospital because they smashed their front teeth in.
Well, when they had the ropes, when they had those ropes that I knew I couldn't hold on to it blue, and I was thinking I might have to go through that if they didn't change it. I'm like, I wonder if I could just lashay from the bar.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Had I known they were going to be that slippery, that's what I would have done if I didn't realize you could cheat.
Well, I was thinking about it, but then I looked down on the ground and it was like pretty high up at the time when we looked at it, and there was no padding. And I'm like, ugh, that might hurt.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Back to Sarah. That's what we were going to talk about, right?
Yes. Sarah is part of the new blood.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So is this like a permanent, not a, I don't want to say permanent, but this is like a general direction you're going to steer in. You're going to go for it and commit to it hardcore. You're going to be like, you're going to drink the Aru juice?
I guess. I mean, I've been doing, yeah, like long ultra trail running now for a long time. And it's at a point where I'm like, you know, I put so much work into one day and one event. And if it doesn't happen, I mean, it's fine, but it's always like disappointing and like things, you know, when not every day is going to be your day, you know? So, it's really fun actually to be able to like have several like races a year where you get to like try it again and learn more and like, you know, hone your skill for a specific race. But several times a year, I think is much more fun. So yeah.
The trouble with the races in the US, especially for like 100-mile mountain races, is that they're almost all at altitude. Like the serious prestigious ones that people care about, you've got Leadville, Western, Hard Rock, all at altitude. And then you ask people what is on the East Coast and they're like, well,
yeah. So
it's Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly.
This year, I think we both realized that we're not sure if we want to do many more races at altitude, honestly. It just is, it's a lot of work for us to be prepared for that. And if we're going to go at like to spend, you know, a month, at, like personally, I think I need at least like 3 weeks at altitude to feel like I'm like ready to race something, you know, like that. But whereas actually like doing a short event, like I feel like our fitness could probably get us through, you know, if we had to, like if you're doing a national series race, like, yeah, I could like show up and race it, you know, for an hour, do an hour event and like, that's okay. But to race for 24 hours, like we found,
yeah,
not the same thing, you know? So, that, yeah, that's certainly something. I think, you know, next year I would like to get back to UTMB. That's the one on my list that I've, would like to do well at. I've had one attempt at it, didn't go well. So I'd like to give that one another try, but, yeah, I mean, it is really fun for me to like have a new project, I guess.
That she has currently put basically zero time into.
So well,
that's the thing though, like the women's field needed such an injection of new blood, right? That to see yourself and Emma and Ariel and Annie and Alex Walker, like that just completely vamps up the women's field. And, you know, especially with Lindsay taking a step back next year, I think it needs it.
Rebecca and Faye.
Yeah, Faye seems to be off doing Faye stuff. Whatever.
Actually, it's trying pretty hard. But I just think it's too little too late this year.
Yeah.
And I find, you know, it's been really fun actually to go to these races. And I think it's almost like more welcoming than trail running. You know, people like to say how like inclusive trail runners are, but I feel like actually OCR has been more so to me, honestly, which is refreshing for me also.
And Beth can correct me if I'm wrong, but road runners say trail runners are inclusive.
Yeah.
Road running's really not.
Yeah, triathletes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, road runners are the nicest group ever.
Like, I kind of went from track, which is super not, and then track, road, and then trail, and then OCR, and like it just keeps getting better from there. So yeah, I would say for sure the same thing.
It's been really nice actually, and like, and a lot of like diversity, and I guess like the races that we've been going to are in places that are closer to like cities, you know, and like obviously trail races are you know, pretty rural, but yeah, I feel like there's a lot of diversity and like different age groups and people there that like you don't always see that at trail running races. So it's been really nice.
So sorry, were you saying something, Beth?
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was saying, so how do you bring more of that in though? How do we get even more of that? Because I mean, that's always been the question, right? To bring in more diversity, more people. It's, and again, we're always pushing, especially to get more women up from age groups and stuff like that to jump into the competitive fields. Cause like we see it all the time, these women's fields where the elite field maybe has like nine,
right,
you know, and the big races, it doesn't look as obvious, but you go to smaller races and if you had been there on Sunday, like the elite field was non-existent, you know, so it was there, but it was so small. Mm-hmm. So do we bump that up?
Like from a, I'll let you answer in a second. From like when I started getting into OCR, I think one of the biggest barriers to entry, at least in the elite field, is knowing that you're going to miss the sphere. Like, no matter how, like I wasn't going to go to the store and make a sphere myself and try it out. Literally nobody in the elite field has tried the sphere before they like got to the race, right? I've never met anyone, except maybe Sarah.
Yeah, because we have one.
Yeah, because I have one.
But even then, it wasn't like I was literally just throwing it into the, like a dirt pile, you know. But yeah, and I guess you got to put, he built a rig in our backyard, kind of, so that's helped me a little bit. Like, but
she's done it a total amount of time of like 3 minutes.
Yeah,
so.
Not much. But I think for me, like, there's been less pressure, like. The races I've done, like I've did Western States this year, and I did my other 100-mile race was Run Rabbit Run, which was also pretty, you know, like competitive. And so for me, like doing these races, it's like, yeah, there's like not any pressure for me really at this point. So it feels pretty nice. but I also, right, have the running background. So I don't know. It's like,
yeah, I feel like when you like mess up obstacles, people are like, oh yeah, that's fine. But like when you're just kind of like a shitty runner, people are like, yeah, you've got a lot of work to do.
Maybe.
I mean, right? Like that's, it's 98% of the race is like being good at running. So like,
no,
it helps a lot.
Yeah. I felt like the very first race I did in Jersey, I was like, yeah, this is just a running race. Like for me, if that's what it felt like, you know, but no, I think the same thing in trail running, that we've had that same question of like, how do you bring in more diversity and more women, because yeah, same, we're very underrepresented in trail running too. So I think, I don't know, it's a tough, I don't know, that is a, it's a challenge, but
ultimately, because this is something too that I think about a lot, I think what we're missing is keeping then girls in sport. So, and I've been part of programs too where ultimately that 13 to 18 year old gap is where we lose primarily most women. So I think we have to go back to, how do we engage 14, 15 year old girls? So, because that's, if you lose them there, it's harder to get them back later, right? So if we're wanting to grow sports, so trail running, OCR, I think we have to go back to there and see how can we get those girls involved.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. I think just youth in general, like I really like actually that Spartan has these kids races. The youth races I think are awesome. Yeah. And you don't see that at trail running races frequently, you know, like we do a kids race at Whiteface, but like there's not many
kids trail running races,
you know.
Mostly because you can't set into the woods by themselves.
True.
So.
And actually this weekend my kids were involved in the kids race and it was phenomenal. They had all the obstacles basically just smaller and the course was amazing. Like I ran it with both of my kids and I was like, wow, this is a really difficult course.
I was looking at it and I was like, that looks challenging.
Yeah, it was hard. Like my son did the 3K and it still took him about 40 minutes. Like it was pretty technical running still. So I don't know if maybe even if some of the elites would go over during like the kids races, even the competitive one, if they could, and like hype that up a little bit. Like I was there with Jesse Bruce during some of the kids races and like kind of making a big deal of it. And I think that helps them too, right? Like I took a picture with the kids, the female winner, and like just to help them feel like a part of the bigger scene of it too. And those are the experiences and that helps them stay in it and stay engaged.
Yeah. I mean, I went to like 40 races in 2019, I think. And pretty much like whenever I like went by myself, I had basically nothing to do. So I went and like hung out at the kids race and was like, you got it, go, go, go. And whenever they got done, I'd like give one of them my like Delta thing because I didn't want to fly home with it. But they'd be like so stoked. And then some of them would be like, oh my God, you're Aaron. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry that you know about me. But like, yeah, I mean, they're stoked. And then like some of them actually like remember it. And they come up to me at races and they're like, oh my God, I still have your Delta thing.
That's cool.
And like, that's great. But also like I used to help coach like kids trail running camps. Like it'd be like a 5-day trail running camp in like Mount Hood or Mount Shasta or Tahoe or something. And like almost all those kids are still trail running. And a lot of them had never run on trails in their life. And then like we'd occasionally do like a inner city, like I called it Hoods in the Woods. But but like those kids, like they came from like gangs, like their brothers were like shot to death and stuff. And like, they were like, oh my God, this is like literally the greatest thing I've ever done. It's never been this quiet. I've like literally never seen a mountain before. I'm like, holy crap. But like those kids are like still running and like trying to like get out of the city, which I think is cool.
When you go to something like that, though, when you talk about something like that, you're talking about also an economic barrier.
And
this can hit even when you're talking about getting more kids into it.
Yeah.
I now have friends that have like 3 kids. They want to bring them all out to the race, but the kids aren't little kids. They're like, you know, 13 to 16. And they're still, you know, they got to pay $150 an entry for 3 kids. You can't do that. If you make the prices reasonable for those kids, you're going to get the parents out and you're going to get the kids too, right? So charge the parents full price because they're stupid enough to pay it, you know, but let them bring their kids and, you know, get a huge discount for it. Even if it's half price, it's better than none of the money you would have got from none of those people going.
Yeah. I mean, or like really not that hard to set them up. Like, yeah, charge $10 or like charge nothing for literally anyone who sends them an email who's like, hey, I'm not sure I can afford this. Like, free race codes. Like, I don't know. I don't think it should be that hard. Like, when I was in high school, I was on my mom would buy boots at like the ski swap for like $5, and I had like the worst fucking boots. And then like I was one of the best skiers in the U.S., and I couldn't go to nationals because it was literally a $2,000 entry, and then it'd be another $2,000 to get there, and I'd be like, you guys want to pay? And they'd be like, fuck off, go to work. And I'd be like, okay, well, I guess I need to like pay car insurance and gas. Like, I don't know. Not all kids who are good at sports have money, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely a way that you could reach out and make it easier for those kids. I mean, didn't OCRWC do that this year where
all kids were free.
Yeah. Was it 13 to 17 or something like that? I can't remember the age bracket, but it was, you know.
And well, it's like, smart, it's like feeding them into their you know,
into the machine.
As adults they will pay to do these things, right? Like you want your sport to continue, it makes sense. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
They do one smart thing up here where I don't know what it's like in the States, but our high school students have to have a certain amount of volunteer hours to graduate. So they can actually, when they volunteer at Spartans or at races here, they can attribute those hours towards their graduation hours. So that actually works out well, but they don't promote it enough. They don't go into the high schools and say, hey guys, you want some easy volunteer hours? Come out and say, you failed that obstacle for 8 hours and there you go.
Yeah. Or just stand there and clap. Like just having somebody standing there, like so much more accountable.
Yeah.
Rather than random obstacle with nobody on it. Mm-hmm.
I found the finish of Blue was really good because it was such, you were, I mean, hauling ass down the hill.
Yeah.
And everybody cheering for you. And no matter how much you wanted to stop, just out of sheer guilt, you could not.
Yeah.
I had tons of people screaming for me, like, I don't want to run any faster. I want to stop now.
I think in the elite races, they should always finish like up a really long hill. So that in case it's like a tight race, like it doesn't come down to like who can crawl through the barbed wire the fastest. It's like who can really put the suffering on and like die at the finish. Instead, there's always like an obstacle right before it that like you don't want to fail. So you're going like pretty easy into it. It's like nobody's ever gassed at the finish.
Yeah, like sky races or something.
Like, yeah, like a VK, like people die at the top. They're like, do we need an ambulance?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, I don't think I'd make it. The enemy. I'd never get up the hill.
I think they should do one in Placid and they should finish on the ski jumps.
Right at the top of the 400, like the Red Bull 400, make that be the last obstacle.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, there is an
obstacle. I love that.
There's a race that does that.
Yeah, it's the Red Bull 400.
No, there's an obstacle race that finishes on top, but it's in Denmark or something.
Well, they do all the obstacles way better over there. We know that. Yeah. I'm surprised that's not been like a pilgrimage for you to head out there into Europe and like.
I was planning on it in 2020. I was supposed to go there and do Nordic race and toughest, and then it all just imploded.
Yeah. Poland. That's my OCR pilgrimage. I want to go to Poland.
Yeah.
Those guys are killer.
Yeah. Poland and Russia. Like bison race and the hero race.
Yes. I see that.
All they do is obstacles. It's awesome.
You think?
Well, yeah, they're good runners, but like they're such hard obstacles. It's comical. Like they're so dangerous too.
wasn't there? They had that was like 2017, I think it was, where 2018, where only like one woman finished the course, and I think Albin and a couple other guys made it through, and that was it.
Oh, that was the race that Albin lost. That was OCR European Championships or European OCR Championships.
I think you're right.
Unfortunately, the order of words matters because there was another European OCR Championship, whatever. But yeah, Leon beat him because there were so many hanging rigs. But yeah, I think that was the Federated European Championship, like the precursor to the like Federated World Championship. And they were like, we did a great job. We got one woman to finish.
It's like a Savage podium.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's how you save your money. There you go.
Yeah, anybody.
Just 8 foot lachets.
I love Savage, but I still think at this point, like everybody says their obstacles are so hard. They're so hard. They're really not. Their rig can be hard.
That was my experience. I mean, I really liked everything about that race. But the obstacles, there was less of them and they were easier. And then you got something so much harder, like multiple magnitudes harder than everything else. Mm. And then you got another thing that was really hard and that was it. And you're like, oh, cool. So I just did a running race followed by like a ninja course real quick.
Yeah. They do have the best Hercules horse.
Do they? It's a chain.
Yeah, but it's consistent.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great.
And it plays a factor.
Yeah.
It's not affected by the rain as much. Went through that. I hate that. I don't know. The Hercules was heavy. It was still heavy on Sunday, but it was like you had to pick the right bag. So you picked the one not sitting in a puddle and you were fine. All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, it felt very heavy to me. As soon as I touched it, I was like, oh, this is like going to take all my body weight to get this thing up on Saturday.
So they changed the fences too, which was interesting. Yeah. So you can't put your feet on the fences as easily.
But I was going to say, like, still the rule says you can.
Oh, no, no, you can. Although somebody was up there screaming that you got to have 1 foot on the ground. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I rolled up to the Herkoist and I saw Sean go straight to burpees. He was like, nope, can't even move that thing. He said he couldn't even get it to budge.
Yeah.
And then I watched like some of the like beefy Canadian dudes just like not moving it. And I picked one up and I got it maybe like foot off the ground. And I was like, that's quite heavy. And I like looked over at Atkins and he was just staring at me as he lowers his thing. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go over there and take his. And so I just stood behind him until he put it down for like half a second. And then I took his because he picked it like one of the three dry bags.
Mm. He's really good at figuring out which one's the dry stuff.
Well, yeah. And he always gets to it first. Like I rolled up and my only choice was soaking wet bag. It was like in a puddle.
Did you guys happen to see Samuel Ebert's fiance, Jade? Did you see her stories?
I just saw her. I actually didn't watch her stories because we didn't have service in Canada.
So she did the entire super race, just the open wave, and she's 6 months pregnant, and she did all the male weights.
Oh, that's sick.
The male Herkoist, the male bucket, the male sandbag, everything. The male Atlas stone.
You know what's interesting? Alex Walker just did that in Texas today.
Did she? But she probably did it in a competitive race.
This weekend. Yeah, she did it in the elite race. She got fifth in the sprint.
Overall.
Like in the men's race. Cause to do the men's weights, you have to show up and or to like finish in the results, you have to show up to the men's wave. Which is funny because I've talked to Koble about it because I'm gonna talk about a previous girlfriend. I kept telling Nicole to do it because I thought it would be hilarious because the men's weights are really easy. And Koble told her that if you're a woman, you can register for the men's race. But if you're a man, you can't register for the women's race, which I think is sexist, but whatever.
So you're going to go out there and say that you're willing to identify?
I'm getting sexualized or something.
But right what's now. The point of you doing the women's race?
I don't know. What if I want to crush some ladies?
I don't get it.
I don't know.
Are they going to pay you the money?
What's the point of the women doing the men's race?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I still couldn't podium, so I don't care.
Yeah. That's what Hammond would always say. He'd be like, me and Lindsay, we're going to duke it out. And then he'd be like, oh, shit, she is faster.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, excuse me. Well, I think we kept you guys long enough. Beth, you got anything else for Aaron and Sarah?
Yeah, no, that was great. Thanks so much for coming on and chatting with us.
Sorry, that was so all over the place.
Oh, that's okay. That's what we do. We don't, but we actually still talk about OCR, which is, you know.
Yeah, that's great. We're not just talking about Dunkin' Donuts and Matt's kid pooping on the floor in front of him.
Anyway, guys, thanks for making the trip up north of the border. We look forward to seeing you again next year up here and kicking some ass.
Yeah, hopefully. Maybe. Thanks for having us on.